So good morning again. Having the kids here definitely brings a special kind of energy. I can feel it kind of coming into this room too, which is kind of this nice bright energy. So thank you all for being here this morning. Domyo is at a Soto Zen Buddhist Association conference in New York, which is a gathering of ordained from across the country. So I'm sure she will come back filled with ideas and inspiration. So it's really great that she was able to go. So the talk for today, so the plan is I'm going to offer a talk and then I'm hoping that we have some discussion around that after. So the topic today is vow and intention. And two things, maybe three things are happening that were an inspiration for the talk today. So one is that the days are getting shorter. There's a little chill in the air. You can feel that autumn is on its way, even though we've had these just sparkling, gorgeous days. And there's a way that we naturally start to turn inward with the change of the season and the loss of the light. So that's kind of like internally, I think we all turn, oftentimes we turn towards that. Another thing that's happening, as I mentioned before, is that term student program will start next Saturday. And for those of you who aren't familiar, it's a period of time where we specifically dive deeply into practice for a term, which will be for the fall term. It ends in December. And it is it's meant to emulate what the monks did in the Buddhist time, which was they wandered in the summer, and then they gathered together during the rainy season to train together intensively. So they were out, kind of like us, we're out in the world doing our thing, and vacations, and outside, and a lot more of activity typically in the summer. And then there's a way that then we come together for this period of training that has a beginning and an end, and we cultivate Sangha in this training period. We come together, share our stories, share our vows of practice, and we cultivate community and connection with each other. So that's on the horizon. So we've got kind of this natural, the natural environment is supporting this effort, and there's sort of this rhythm to the calendar that we have. And the other thing that's happening is kind of on the other end of the spectrum is there's just an awful lot happening in this world of ours. The news has kind of given me whiplash trying to catch up with it. And there's a lot going on that is vying for our attention and our compassion and our understanding and our presence. And all of these things turn many of us and turn me towards deeper practice, to committing to practice. There's a need both internally and externally. Just kind of feel that momentum heading in that direction. So that's what I'm going to talk about this morning, is about how do we support vow and intention? How do we support ourselves in staying with our deepest intention? That's oftentimes the trick. It seems to kind of bubble up. We turn towards the mind that seeks the way, our deeper intention. And then there's a lot of things that get in the way of following through on that, turning towards that, going deeper. So how is it that we can support ourselves in orienting ourselves and having this committed, steady effort towards cultivating our deepest intention? So one way that we do that is through setting vows of practice, so vows of training. And we do that as part of the term student program, but you can do that outside of the term student program. Sometimes that doesn't always work. And it can be really helpful to take on a vow for a short period of time where we specifically identify and make public in some way or known to someone what we're going to do. So this talk is kind of like an anatomy of a vow, like deconstructing. How do we formulate a vow? What are some ways that we do that, and why would we want to do that? What is the deeper training? What happens in that? What is abuse to that? So as I said, sometimes we do it as part of a term student program, but there have been other times where I have just set up a vow with my teacher when it hasn't worked to participate in the term student, or if something is particularly coming up for me that I want to kind of engage and investigate for a period of time and have my teacher witness that vow. So there's lots of different ways that we can do it. So the elements of a vow of training include that it has a beginning and an end. So it's especially for a term student or a specific vow of training. There are lifetime vows, but that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about vows of training. So it has a specific beginning and an end. And it includes an aspiration of some kind. The big reason that you're engaging in this vow. It includes some specific quantifiable things that you will do. So things that you can measure. Things that if someone asked you, did you keep your vow? You would be able to say yes or no. Aspiration's a little bit harder because you can't really, sometimes my aspiration has been to cultivate compassion. Well, it's hard to measure. It's hard to graph my compassion level from day to day. But underneath that, you can put some quantifiable things that you're going to do that are going to support that effort. So it has beginning and end, an aspiration, specific things that you'll do. It's witnessed by either Sangha members, a term student, by a teacher, by somebody else. Somebody else knows about your vow. Can be very helpful. And then the last thing is that it has some checkpoints, some reminders, and support. So there's a way that that we don't just initially make that vow and forget about it, but we built in some ways that we're going to check in on ourselves either by going to the closing term student retreat as a term student, or we might set up checkpoints with, I know I've participated in term student where we've had like a Dharma buddy, so we would every couple of weeks email each other and say, how's that vow going? Remember, we made those vows? Oh yeah. So different ways of reminding ourselves of our intention and helping us stay with it. So I'm going to talk about all those elements a little bit, and then I would love to open up discussion from those of you who have participated in making a vow of training or just questions and discussion. So that's where we're headed. So backing up. So as I mentioned, it has a beginning and an end, these kinds of term vows. And the reason for this, one of the reasons for this, is that it allows you to stretch yourself a little bit without committing yourself to a lifetime of daily zazen. That might be one of your practice vows. So it's really helpful in terms of like, well, I could do this for a couple of months, and you can try it on, and it allows you to see how that feels, because it can be too daunting. But we want to find that spot where we're stretching ourselves just a little bit, but not too much. So knowing that it's not forever, we're able to take that on a little bit more easily. It can feel too daunting to make a commitment for a much, much longer period of time. So this is a great way to ease into that. So as I said before, it includes an aspiration. And so it's important to consider kind of this theme or the aspiration for a vow. It is important in that it answers the question of why. Why are we engaging the vow? What is it that we want to cultivate? Why are we making this vow at all? So as I mentioned before, sometimes the aspiration can be to cultivate a particular quality, like compassion or vigor or diligence, generosity. Or it could be to deeply investigate one of the precepts. I've done that in the past where I've just taken one of the grave precepts, and that has been my aspiration theme, to dive deeply, to practice that with every day of the term, and hold that really forefront in my mind, a particular aspect of the precepts. It's really helpful to have sort of this bigger idea, this bigger aspiration, to identify then what's it going to look like? How are we going to engage that? How are we going to dive deeply into that aspiration? So, because sometimes it kind of moves around a little bit. Sometimes we start with the nuts and bolts and then look at what all that adds up to. What are all these pieces of practice and what is the aspiration in that? And sometimes, especially when we're newer to this, the vow might simply be to sit more, which is a great vow. And it begs the question, so why? Why do you want to sit more? And that helps you identify your aspiration. Is it to deepen your practice in some way? What aspect of practice? Why do we sit? So in a way, I'm imagining how when I formulate a vow for myself, I kind of imagine this sort of inverted triangle. So you have the aspiration that's supported by the next level, which would be the nuts and bolts, the specific things that we would do. So, and again, this kind of narrows down, and this is just an example of how you might formulate if you choose to do this. So the aspiration, the next part would be maybe identifying a couple of major things that you're going to do over the term. The term ends in December for Brightway, and it could be participating in a retreat, either a Zazen Kai here or a retreat at Dharma Rain or Great Vow. So it could be a couple of events. It could be weekly participation. So it moves from kind of a couple maybe major events to maybe the things that you're going to do weekly. So it could be that you're going to come on Sundays regularly or Tuesdays or Thursdays. It could be other commitments of service to the temple or in the community. And then it goes down to, so we have kind of bigger events, then weekly, and then daily. Then what is our daily practice going to look like? Are there certain things that we're going to do every day? Zazen's often one of those things that we include in that. And so to give you some ideas about the nuts and bolts that could be included, I dove into the archives and I found a handout that I got from Kyogen when I was first a term student, I was trying to figure out what, and you can tell by the font, this is like from a typewriter that got this cut. So I love that. It's like an IBM Selectric to me. I think this is probably 91 or 92. And so this was the handout that was given when we were doing term student back then. And it gives some really interesting ideas about things that you can include that you might not have considered. So I'm going to share a few of the highlights from his suggestions, which were develop a simple short morning service that you do in addition to Zazen if you do it in the morning. As I said before, regular attendance may be Sunday, Tuesdays, or Thursdays. Doing housework as a work retreat, so silent, mindful, diligent work that you do at home. Things like ironing or cleaning, something that's repetitive. Cleaning workspace before lunch and before going home if you're at work. Regularly putting shoes straight. Writing an entry in a journal every day. Setting aside moments in the day for silence. And I've not done this, but a friend of mine would, at noon every day, would have a minute of silence just at her desk. So regular study or sutra reading, saying the meal verse. I like this one, making the bed before morning zazen, which implies to me that there were a whole group of people that were having trouble making their beds. wearing your wagesa or roksu daily if you have one. Regularly participating in sanzen. It says, refrain from certain worldly activities, in parens, please be specific. I'm wondering what that, I'm kind of curious what that might mean, but it might be, sometimes I've done short-term vow, not a whole term, but of just low stimulus, like I'm not going to listen to the radio in the car, or I'm not going to turn on the TV for the week, those kinds of worldly activities. Meditation at stoplights while commuting. I've done that one before. That's a very helpful one. Making gassho, so putting your hands together before picking up a particular item you use regularly. I did a vow one term of, I didn't make gassho, but I tried to take 3 breaths before I would answer the phone, just to center myself. Make a Buddha statue for your altar. spend a day not using the word I.
Oh.
Mm. Although you might end up referring to yourself in the third. You could have a whole different royal we. I don't think that's the intended effect of that. Spend one day at work only speaking when necessary. I have done that, and it's interesting how little you say and how people don't notice actually that you're doing that. It's really interesting. It's like, people are very happy to have you listen. Spend one day of the weekend in silence. Do a personal retreat in the mountains. That sounds great, doesn't it? Consciously attempt to follow one precept each day. So those are just some ideas. Kind of stretches my imagination a little bit about what I might include in a vow. And the other example I found, because I was kind of curious, because I thought that's how I've kind of structured vows, as I said, kind of this bigger aspiration down to the nuts and bolts of what I might do daily. And I found a handout from the Village Zendo in New York. And they have what they call ONGO, their term student program. And they actually have a form online, which I'll kind of highlight some of this. But I thought this was an interesting approach, too. So they include a definition of the value of a vow, and this is how they define that. So this period of intensified practice allows us to examine how we care for ourselves so that we are better able to serve others. By looking at the aspects of body, mind, and spirit, we can address the totality of self. So the way they structure vows at this particular Sangha is they divide it into vows related to body, mind, and spirit, and they're more emphasizing a bit of self-care in an effort to support service to others or expanding that out. So what I love about this is that the Bodhisattva vows includes ourselves as well as the wider Sangha. So taking care of ourselves allows us to care more deeply, more presently, more wisely for others. And we sometimes forget that in some of this, that we become more outwardly directed, and there's this balance. So some of the things they include are, I will restore my body by, and then there's all these things like, it says flossing my teeth, spending more time at the gym. I will nourish my body by, talks about healthful eating. I will honor my body by working on my meditation practice, posture, starting a new habit. Bidding adieu to a bad habit. This is what it says. And then mind, it says, I will work with my mind by meditating daily for X amount of minutes. I will study particular sutra. And then cultivating and supporting the spirit, it says, I will renew my spirit by, and then it's the examples they give are spending time with children, visiting the museum, walking to nowhere. And I will strengthen my spirit by attending a weekly meditation group, going on retreat, or just some of the examples. So here they're really including themselves in the vow, and it's structured in a different way. But again, it all points towards this deeper aspiration of, read it again, examine how we care for ourselves so that we can better able to serve others. So one important thing to keep in mind about formulating vows and keeping vows is finding that middle way where we stretch ourselves a little bit, but we don't simply make a list of things that we're already doing. So sometimes when I see this, it makes me think of at work, I have to do growth goals for goals for the year. And I invariably will cheat and just write down things I'm already doing so I don't have to do anything new. So that's work. That is not the spirit of this kind of vow, and it can be easy to get a little complacent if you've been practicing a while to just go like, well, here's my vow, and it's stuff you're already doing. So really challenge you to add something if you're formulating a vow. Do something a little bit more that's going to stretch you. So one of the important aspects about a vow is how we work with it when we fall short of our intention, when we get derailed, which invariably we stretch ourselves a little bit and sometimes it doesn't work out or life circumstances come that we totally did not expect. So this is a really important aspect of making these vows is how, what do we do next? We might have vowed to sit a certain amount or attend an event and we didn't do it. So what happens next? So this is an opportunity to really see your habits of mind around those kinds of things and to treat yourself gently, kindly, with compassion, but to also keep going. Because that's a really pivotal point in practice that comes up in various forms again and again and again, is we fell short of our intention and sometimes we just don't want to look too carefully at that. We don't even really want to think about it, talk about it, and then we just keep not doing whatever it was that we said we were going to do because we just don't, it's uncomfortable to kind of turn back and go, you know what, I was going to do this. This is what my vow was, and I didn't do it. So it's really important to build that capacity to keep going, turn back, sweep it away, treat ourselves with a lot of kindness and gentleness, and move forward. It's what we do next, and it's a very valuable practice, a really important teaching in formulating and having vows. And the last thing I'll mention again is that it's important that it's witnessed. It's really helpful if you're part of the term student because you've shared it with the rest of the group that's doing that. And there's a way that makes you a little more serious about keeping it because you know other people heard you say it and you're going to come back around to the end of the term and you're going to give some feedback about how it went. So it helps you. We voluntarily do this and it just helps you stay with it. It's much like when people decide to formally become Buddhists and take Jukai, that's a public ceremony because it's really helpful to be witnessed in saying, I intend to live by the precepts. I invariably will fall short, but this is my public intention. And people support you in that when they hear that, when they hold that, when the community hears it, people will support you in that. And the last thing I'll mention about this is that it's really helpful to have reminders and support about what you wanted to do because it's so easy to forget. At least it's really easy for me to forget what it was, especially if it's new things. So having someone know about your vow helps. Keeping copies of the vow around in places that you see it frequently, on the mirror in the bathrooms. So I've kept it on the visor of my car. So when I flip down, I see it. Taking a picture and putting it on my phone can sometimes help. Just a place where you're going to encounter it again and again and again. Having, as I mentioned before, having a Dharma buddy that you're going to be a support to each other and maybe check in quickly by email or a text or something about how that is going. And one thing I've started to do recently for myself is making, I'm kind of a data nerd, so I just started doing like a little graph of some of the things that I'm wanting to do and being able to fill in today when I do it, and it's really very satisfying to make those little X's. So that's one, and I've never done that with like Zazen, Zen stuff. I've done it with work stuff, but I haven't done it with this kind of stuff. So I'm experimenting with that, and it's nice to have a visual. And again, it's another reminder. So all of these things are just meant to inspire you, and it might be that information that you tuck away for another time when you're ready to do a vow. But these can be like short term. It can be like a week that you do a vow practice. It can be the term. It can be longer term than that. But I just encourage you to consider that because it is a support for turning towards that mind that seeks the way, our deeper intention, aligning ourselves with that. So I'm going to close with a little passage from Living by Vow by Shohaku Akamuro. And he talks about, he's specifically talking about Zazen here, but it has to do with vow also. So here's what he says. He says, he's referring to this Zen practitioner, Gaishan, who vowed to build a monastery. In his comments about Gaishan's practice, Dogen Zenji talks about raindrops. He asks us to contemplate Gaishan's practice in the mountains. We should try to feel as if we were in Gaishan's place. Listen to the sound of raindrops at midnight. The raindrops have the power to pierce not only moss, but also rock. Gaishan sat by himself in the deep mountain. Our practice of Zazen, like his, resembles a raindrop. We are small and can sit only for a short time. Each drop alone has little power, but still we continue to practice. As raindrops eventually pierce not only moss, but also rock, continuous practice of Zazen has the power to make a hole even in a rock. This is an essential point. Our practice doesn't have a mystical, mysterious, or magical power to clear away all delusions. But like the raindrops, we sit moment by moment, day after day, year after year, and this sitting generates the power to erode rock. Our effort is like raindrops. It doesn't create change in one day, or a few days, or even a few years. But if we just keep doing it, when conditions are right, it happens. So that's my talk for today. So I invite comments or questions, and curious to know if any of this resonates for those of you who've done terms to me in the past.
You know, I was thinking I've done this twice, and then the first time, so we spent the first retreat talking about personal history, a karmic history, spiritual history, and that takes quite a long time. And the vows are just something that we write and we put in a box, and we don't discuss them at all. I was just thinking when you were speaking that maybe I'll talk to Domio and see if there was a way where we could talk more about why we made those vows, instead of like writing it, like, or bringing it from home last minute and just putting it in a box. Mm-hmm. So we don't discuss why we picked those particular things, what in that life history or whatever connected you to make that. So I'm just thinking that I wish we had more discussion on that rather than our past.
Yeah, that's a good point, yeah. Oftentimes there is sort of a connection that we don't see.
Yeah.
But it's sometimes nice to make that
explicit.
Yeah, it'd
be great to see the connection.
Yeah, like how did this lead to this?
And sometimes it's our karma itself that leads us to pick vows that are maybe too much to chew, too much, you know? So, you know, because I've done terms to before at Dharma Rain, and there's not a whole lot of sharing, like, these are mine, and these are, you know, just some people will make a statement, but it's good to remember this isn't something to beat yourself over the head with, and, you know, oh, I didn't sit today, or oh, I didn't do this mindfulness today, but it's kind of interesting how if you're trying to address this karma in the past, how it can just come out and just do its thing, and you're like crossing off this big list of things to do. So I would try to narrow it down and keep it pretty simple.
It is kind of classic to overdo. If you're newer to it, I'd say, like, don't do too much, but part of me is like also pushing people that have done it a lot, you can get a little,
exactly. You don't want to grit your teeth through it.
Yeah, totally.
I have done term student a few times, and I think the one I enjoyed the most was when I had one vow. So, like everyone else, I would begin the term in my earlier experiences with a list of things that sure looked like I could do them, but it rarely worked out that I did them as well as my expectation was or my intention was at the beginning. But when I had one, even that one, I didn't do quite as well as I intended, but it felt so much more peaceful to me. The only other thing I will add is I can't say enough about the term student program in terms of building and strengthening our community.
I had a vow to be careful what I said or what comes out of my mouth, and so I found when I would blurt out profanity or inappropriate thing, I just got, after a while, I just laughed because I heard, I was like going, okay. And so it was kind of a check, but you could do it nicely instead of browbeating yourself going, hey, okay, don't do that. Kind of like you would to a kid, you know. And it helped to lighten up about it and to realize that so much of what we do sometimes just comes right out. So,
but did it help with?
Periodically. You find yourself driving your car.
Oh, no
cooler. So my new thing is that everybody that cuts me off or something, they have to go to the bathroom really bad. So they just have to go there really fast and cut me off. So I'm like, okay, just let them go because we don't want an accident. I think if you just figure out a humorous way,
yeah,
it's a little easier to roll with it.
Yeah.
But just how I do it.
Well, you, your talk was helpful to me today because you said try on the vow. You know, that it's a short period of time. And I think that's very helpful. It just, boy, that's a relief, you know. And then I love getting up in the morning and cooking and working out. And to me, that feels like a meditation. And walking my dog without using my phone, you know, just being there with her, all feels like a meditation. Mm-hmm. And so I was very happy to hear when you said that that could be part of a vow. Mm-hmm. But then you said, you know, you need to stretch yourself. And if you're already doing that, you know, go beyond that a little bit. So I have a hard time sitting. So I think that would be my vow, is just even to sit for 5 minutes in the morning.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was really helpful. Thank you.
Yeah.
I've done the term student 4 times, and sit more has been my vow every time. I think I managed it once. I definitely chime in support of the Dharma Journal as an idea. Domio observed that the Dharma Journal tends to get boring because your Dharma is the same, your karma is the same, but it can be really informative to take a Dharma Journal of the things that you've been thinking about and then see the same topic pop up every few pages. That could be a very interesting piece of instrumentation to throw on your life.
Wah, wah, wah. There I am. So when you say Dharma journal, you just mean like just journaling about how practice is going? Or yeah. Is there something to, yeah?
Yeah. Practice and your relationship with practice and what popped up in your life that made you think of practice.
Oh.
Kinds of things.
Nice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just a logbook, really.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, because a lot of times you think, oh, I've been doing this forever. And then you look at the calendar and you go, well, since last week, you know.
Just seems like forever.
So I think it gives you a perspective that, you know, like a limited vow or just to check off. Because sometimes if I get a cold or I get sick, I'll write it on the calendar when it first started. Because 3 days later you've been sick forever and you know, oh my God. And then later you look back and go, oh, it's been 2 days, okay, I'm okay. So I think it does help to physically write things down because we're so mental.
Yeah.
And you can, imagination can go wild.
Yeah, and time sort of expands and contracts.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, for those of you who haven't done the specific term student program, I would just echo what Jingru said about building community. And we do spend the first day a lot sharing stories. And it can be very powerful to be witnessed in that way, both sharing your own story in a way that is so supportive and you have such excellent listeners that are holding that story in the space. And it's also a practice of deep listening. So there's a way that we offer that to others when they are sharing their stories, in the way that we witness each other, that you just don't encounter very often in life. You just don't have that just complete, accepting, non-judgmental presence, just hearing you. So it's something that you can't really emulate by yourself. Really being witnessed by others and being held by others in that way is really powerful. It's very pivotal for me in my practice to do that, to share my story and have it heard and say some difficult things at times. That really, in a way, it's just like that's everybody's story in a way. The details are different, but we share a lot of the same karmic patterns that you kind of go, oh. There's a way that you just feel very much connected to the human path and karma and suffering, and you are totally in it with everybody else, which is very comforting. So it's just about noon. Any other thoughts or questions?
Yeah, I'll add one.
Sure.
I have learned things in the term student program, and I'm specifically going back to my first one, that I don't know how I would have ever learned them. And it was incredibly important to me to hear what I heard, mm-hmm. just by somebody else telling their story. Yeah. It was incredibly therapeutic. Mm-hmm. So that's why I did it more than once. I kept coming back.
Yeah.
The other strange thing is that you tell your story, it should just be one story, right?
Mm.
But then you tell it again, well, it changed. You know, and how is that possible? I mean, you only got one story, so why did it change when you told it the second time or the third time?
Right.
It's just different things.
Well, you start coming editing out stuff that this wasn't important, and
the perspective changes as you go along.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it's been a few years since I've done it, but I did two in a row, I think. And I've been avoiding it for a lot of years. So. I'm looking forward to going back and seeing what I wrote before. I hope I still have it.
But you bring up a good point. I can't pull the Dogen quote out of my head, but it's like talks about how the past informs the future, and the future flows to the present, mm-hmm. and all these different dimensions that we really are different selves, mm-hmm. and that the narrative changes, and we have the ability to actually change our view of the past and change that narrative and that story through that telling. And I think that's one of the really powerful, because it feels, at least for me, my experience is, it has felt fixed. This is who I am, this is my story, this is the effect, bam, that is unchangeable. And part of what has happened for me through the telling and through the term student is like, it's much more fluid than I realized. And that view can really change, and it can really heal a lot of things that I felt were really kind of fixed in the past as harmful and painful, have it totally just like kind of picking up the jewel and looking at it through a different lens. So glad you brought that up, because it really, that story does change, and it really is different, and the past does change. Mm-hmm. Amazingly enough, it feels fixed, but it does change. Any final thoughts? Thanks, everyone, for being here.
Thank you.